Hey, Pardon My Take listeners. You can find every episode on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music. This episode is brought to you by Body Armor Zero Sugar. The brand new zero sugar sports drink from our friends at Body Armor provides real hydration with no artificial sweeteners, flavors, or dyes. And whether you're looking to stay hydrated or recovering from a long weekend, Body Armor Zero Sugar has got you covered with great tasting flavors like fruit punch and lemon lime. Available in stores nationwide, head on over to Body Armor Store on Amazon and get yours today.
What does it take to become a NASCAR legend? Generations of victory.
One of the great masters of the sport.
Motor oil in your veins. Does it take irrational confidence?
Tony Stewart wins.
A little bit of last lap magic. What about fandom that runs in the family? A track where every mile becomes a memory. Or maybe it's simply knowing that new legacies are built one lap at a time. NASCAR Legends, presented by Geico at Talladega, Sunday at 3 p.m. Eastern on Fox.
On today's Part of My Take, we have Sean Marion, The Matrix Tricks, in studio. We taped it a couple weeks ago. We also have PFT in Hong Kong. We do explain it to PFT what happened in the Final Four. We have a big mad from Auburn fans. Who's back of the week, and a very special Monday reading. Huge show, crossing time zones, crossing days. PFT is recording a day in advance. A little bit wild, but a fun show. Before we get to all of that.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
Okay, let's go.
It's Part of My Take, presented by Barstool Sports.
Welcome to Part of My Take, presented by the Cash App, our new presenting sponsor. Today is Monday, April 8th, or if you're PFT who's currently in Hong Kong, it already is April 8th. Hello from the future.
Greetings from the future. It's nice. It's very sunny outside. It's a little smoggy in the future, so something to be on the lookout for. But yeah, Hong Kong is a great city. It's kind of weird podcasting on a Monday morning, but you know what? We grind. We persevere. We overcome these adversities.
PFT, this is actually a throwback to when we first started Part of My Take over 3 years ago, when we thought it would be a good idea to do the show on the morning of and try to release it at noon. And then after like two episodes, we're like, this is the dumbest thing we've ever done. So
it was
throwback episode for you.
Yeah, it usually takes my brain a good, you know, 6-7 hours to start percolating to the point where I can give these takes off. So it's kind of unusual, but my body still doesn't know what time it is. So my body thinks that it's Sunday night still. So I'm just very, very confused. By the time I get back to New York, I'm not going to know which way is up, which way is down.
All right, so we're going to do a few things. We have Sean Marion coming up, really good interview. We also taped, before PFT left, our Monday reading Hank's resume, which is all-timer. Before we do that, we're going to go a little explain it back and forth, because obviously Hank and I didn't watch the Rugby Sevens. PFT didn't catch the Final Four, so we're going to explain it to each other and riff off that. And we'll start, PFT, with the Final Four. Hank, by the way, is sick. So if he complains during this, that's why. He's being a little bit of a B-word.
If I complain?
Yeah, you're being a B-word.
Oh, if I complain.
Okay, so Hank's being a little bit of a B-word. But PFT, we went to the game on Saturday night. First Final Four in history to serve booze. So shout out Minneapolis for that. All-time
that's
moment.
That's very Minnesotan.
Oh, we got very lost inside the stadium. One of the most confusing stadiums we've ever been to. But all-time moment to have booze. And we got to our seats. We had a guy who we almost had to fight because he like was touching Hank a lot, and he had nacho cheese he had nacho cheese all over himself, and he would refuse to stop taking pictures of us. Like literally every time out, he'd stand up and just try to take a picture of us. So
I'll just say, like, Hank is a very approachable, touchable person. You just see him and you want to, like, just put your hand on his shoulder. So I don't really have a problem with that guy harassing him. Like, that Hank, you were kind of asking for it.
Yeah. The provocation.
What was Hank wearing? Hank, what were you wearing?
He was wearing an Auburn jersey with no shirt on underneath.
Yeah. Yeah, you were asking for it big time.
Yeah, yeah. All right, so first game. So we'll flash forward. Virginia-Auburn, it was actually a very, very good game, and it was like essentially Auburn winning at halftime. Virginia starts to dominate in the second half. Then with 5 minutes left, they're up 10 points, and Virginia just stopped scoring. They were like, yeah, we're done. We're only going to play 35 minutes of this game. They stopped scoring until 9 seconds left. But we have two of the controversial things. You had the free throws at the end from Kyle Guy after he makes a huge corner three. And then you also have the double dribble that everyone is very mad about online right now.
Yeah.
And it was wild inside the arena because we couldn't hear the whistle. So all that happened was the game, like, the ball gets into the corner. Kyle Guy throws up the shot. Good call on the foul, by the way. It was definitely a foul. Bruce Pearl lost his mind, but we couldn't hear a whistle. So we just, like, couldn't figure out what was going on other than Bruce Pearl was losing his mind. It could have been that they won and he was losing his mind. And everyone melted down, and credit to Kyle Guy, because hitting three free throws in that, like, situation, that's the shit you do in your, like, your backyard, and you miss two out of three, and you're like, all right, redo. And you just keep doing that over and over until you hit all three. He was money on all three. And Auburn, I would say that might be the worst possible way to lose a Final Four game of all time.
It's tough, yeah. The double dribble, that was something else. And now you're going to have, like, people talking about expanded review and replay and shit like that. That was a pretty obvious blown call. Do you remember that video game way back in the day called Double Dribble?
Yes.
It always struck me as being very strange that they named their video game after, like, a violation in basketball.
Yes.
Just, like, the most boring play ever. Double dribble. But yeah, the Kyle Guy shot, the free throws were very, very clutch. He is making a hard case for the Jim Nantz tie player of the year. I think if it's not Kyle Guy, I think even if UVA loses the national championship, Jim Nantz is going to find a way to get him that tie.
Well, it's actually funny you bring that up, because Jim Nantz, it's going to be difficult for Jim Nantz because he usually gives it to a senior, and I think Virginia only has one senior, an Aussie, Jack Salt, which is an all-time name. Texas Tech has a couple big-time seniors, so I feel like you're leaning towards Texas Tech with that. But yeah, the double dribble. So here's my problem with the double dribble, and everyone, double dribble Twitter had a meltdown. There's two things. Mm-hmm. One is Ty Jerome, he sold it so well that, like, everyone, even in the arena, it's one of those things where no one said anything in the moment. It was afterwards that everyone kind of caught up. He, like, you know when Chris Webber traveled before the timeout, and he looked and stopped and was like, oh, what am I doing here? Ty Jerome did none of that. He did not miss a beat. He literally just picked up the ball and started dribbling again. And that was, I think that's why everyone, including the refs and the fans, were just like, whatever, this is fine. This is fine. This is part of the rule. And the other thing was, Auburn was trying to foul. They grabbed Ty Jerome as the ball was going off his foot. Mm-hmm. So it's like, you could have called a foul there too. And it's one of those situations where everyone's going to get mad, and Auburn has every right to be mad. But at the end of the day, I mean, you really can't do much there because it could have been a foul call. Ty Jerome did a good job of selling it. And then the call in the corner with Kyle Guy was the correct call. So Auburn has a terrible loss. But at the end of the day, it's like, that's kind of how it goes. Like, you can't play sliding doors. You can't be like, you're going to go back all the way to the first half and be like, well, this call should have gone another way and it would have changed everything.
No, you're right. The double dribble itself was probably the smoothest double dribble I've ever seen in my life. It's
ever.
A good life lesson, really. It's just like, if you act like you're supposed to be there, like nothing's a problem. If you're maybe at a restaurant or inside like somebody's like a building that you're not supposed to be in, if you just act like it's totally cool, 9 times out of 10, you'll get away with it. So just, if you fuck up in life, don't look around and don't be that guy in the commercial that tells the refs that you committed a violation to give the ball to the other team.
Or the guy who, like, wears sweatpants and purple shoes to the dog show trying to be correct.
Exactly. Well, exactly. I would actually say the opposite of that, Big Cat, because I was so confident in my sweatpants look that I didn't think that I would get in trouble. It's like, oh, if this guy's dressed like a 70-year-old homeless person, then he probably is supposed to be here because no one would intentionally go on public like that.
So that was the first game. So a couple of things that came out of that. We have a big mad. Here's a couple big mads I want to throw your way. Let's see. The first one was, that's so fucking Auburn, it's unreal. We sold our soul to the devil for the kick six in 2013, and now life is just enough success to get emotionally invested, then brutal heartbreak. Awesome point, because the kick six was such an insane play that I actually do believe in this, where like if you there were enough Auburn fans that were sitting in their living room on their knees in their living room praying and being like, please God, if you give us a touchdown here, we'll never ask for anything again. And now This is what you get. Now you get the never anything again, and you get losses like this because you got the kick six.
Exactly. But I think if you were to ask Auburn fans, they would say it was extremely worth it for the kick six. Like in that moment, if you had said you returned this kick for a touchdown, you beat Alabama, but you're never going to win another national championship in any sport ever again, they would all say, absolutely, let's do it.
Yes. All right, this one is especially brutal because I think this happened to a decent amount of Auburn fans. This guy said, was in a wedding watching on my phone. After that final three-point shot, I stopped watching game on my phone because I was so excited. Neighbor texted my wife 5 minutes later saying, heartbreaking. I still can't come to grips. We lost, so help me. That Toomer's Corner got... Everyone rushed Toomer's Corner, and then as they slowly figured it out, there was a guy who poured a beer all over his head in the student section. The Auburn student section inside the stadium went insane, and that is especially like that makes the loss even worse. The fact that you had that moment where you won, and then it was ripped right away from you.
So what did they do? Did they have to like climb up into the oaks and take the toilet paper down? Like, what's the protocol?
I think so.
If you prematurely roll.
Yeah, I think so. I think something is they have to, you know, you can't have toilet paper just laying there after a loss like that.
No.
This person said, my Auburn friend just compared this to her ex-boyfriend, could get her close but never cross the finish line. That's just mean.
Come on.
The refs missing that double dribble was my fire fest. That's relatable. Yes. Everyone's got a personal fire fest. And then the second that white guy stepped to line for the final free throw with that little smirk, I knew we were screwed. I blame all fundamental white basketball players for practicing free throws too much. Kyle Guy is so money. So money.
Yes. Yes, he's very good. I don't think – so when you said earlier it's the situation you prepare for your entire life in the backyard, I don't think that most players go through that exact scenario where they're like, three free throws, let's see if I can do it. But Kyle Guy definitely grew up practicing his free throws in that exact scenario. That's like – that is the ultimate exciting peak of the game for a guy like Kyle Guy.
Yeah, Indiana kid probably playing on like a dirt driveway with a hoop that's been there since 1945. All right, last big mad. This is weird because it came from a Virginia fan. I hope you all get carpal tunnel typing double dribble to your 17 combined followers to see. Plus, then your hands slowly deteriorate into terrible arthritis. Plus, you can't Venmo your bookie the medium sum of money you lost on Auburn Moneyline. Plus, he comes and hits them with a hammer anyway. That was from Chris Long, our friend.
Yeah, very, very triggered, Chris. Very triggered. But they won.
Yeah, you won, Chris. You won. He was getting into wars online last night. It was awesome to watch. Oh, by the way, PFT, you probably already know this, but Baylor just won. Went up with 3 seconds left.
Baylor's up. I was about to say Baylor's up with 3 seconds left.
Who won?
Baylor wins.
Okay. All right.
So Baylor wins. Congrats to the ladies.
Future. This is going to be awesome if UConn hits a lot. All right. Next game. There's only a couple things I wrote down. Texas Tech's defense is insane, which it is. Matt Mooney, the white guy from Texas Tech, had a third of their points.
Yeah.
They're like Texas Tech's defense. It really is like if you stop moving the ball for 1 second, they just are up your ass. They're the guy. Mm-hmm. They're the annoying guys when you're playing pickup who just full court press and they can strip anytime you lower the ball past your like chest. And it's just insane how active they are. And then here's the big thing, PFT, that anyone who's watching probably didn't realize. Very important moment inside the stadium. They showed Kirk Cousins, Minnesota Vikings quarterback. Home crowd. Michigan State had more fans in the entire stadium than anywhere else. It was the most like cheers and kind of like then they show Patrick Mahomes and the place fucking erupted. And that was
weird,
that was it, right?
Interesting quarterbacks that are good. And they don't clap hard for average quarterbacks that are kind of lame. Kind of strange.
So, yeah, Kirk Cousins also gave the pregame speech, which was perfectly Kirk Cousins. It didn't motivate a single person. And I honestly don't think, like, Michigan State, like, didn't lose the game as much as Texas Tech was just so fucking good.
Yeah. I would love to hear that Kirk Cousins speech. Is it available on the internet?
Yes, I retweeted it last night. It is positively electric. You know what? We'll put it in the show right here.
Tomorrow night, there's going to be a moment in the game where emotion may not be going our way. And mentally, it may not be going our way. Physically, it may not be going our way. Put your flag in the ground, look each other in the eye, and say, choose to be a tough person. Because tough times don't last, but tough people do. Choose to be tough, and you guys will come out victorious. Not only tomorrow night,
then that was electric. I feel like Kirk Cousins is the kind of guy that he like overnight to give himself pump up speeches. He just listens to Joel Osteen podcast and he wakes up in the morning. He's like, okay, I'm ready to go again, Kirk. Time to make a big stack of money and not do shit again.
Yeah, pretty much. So that was, that game, Texas Tech, all credit to Texas Tech. That their team is awesome. Michigan State, like I said, I don't even think Michigan State, like, choked or anything because they actually had a nice comeback there. It's just Texas Tech was, Matt Mooney was on fire and their defense was insane. So you just kind of, like, you kind of put your hands up. And you're like, shit, that just happens. Yeah.
I always think it's just really funny when members of the media, like, insult the coaches to their face getting ready for the game. And that's the storyline going into this game is that it's going to be boring, which is always, that's always electric. I'm actually excited to watch how boring this game's going to be.
I think Texas Tech is going to win. Here's a little tip for CBS. They need to do a live interview in the first half where Zion announces that he's going pro. Something like that.
Oh, yeah.
Or maybe have Zion, you know what they should actually do is someone should pay Zion, which is actually kind of hot in the streets right now. People paying Zion's family. Coach K, we're watching you. And that, by the way, Michael Avenetti, like, I'm pretty sure he just makes shit up. But if he makes shit up about Duke, I will always take it as fact. I'm just going to admit that right now. But if they paid Zion to announce that he's staying at Duke, how about that? And just get everyone to tune in and be like, what? How'd this happen? And then maybe in the second half be like, just kidding, not I'm going to the NBA. And people have to keep tuning in and be like, actually, he's gonna think about it over halftime, and he'll make an announcement in the second half.
The double psych. Yeah, that would definitely get people to stay in tune. They should have Avenatti do a press conference from right outside the stadium, like on the steps.
Yeah,
that's what should be going on, because, like, I can't get enough of Michael Avenatti just discovering that college basketball might be dirty. That's my favorite part of this whole wrinkle in the timeline, is that Avenatti thinks that he's breaking huge, huge news by saying that, like, Arizona may have paid a player. It's like, dude, I got Google too. Yeah.
We all see Sean Miller's face and how much he sweats. That's a guy who pays people. It's not that hard.
Can you imagine how much Sean Miller would sweat under FBI interrogation?
Yeah.
In, like, that room with a single light bulb? He would turn into a puddle.
Yeah, he would be a big puddle. He would just be a puddle of... He and Bruce Pearl together could, like, create its own little pond.
Yeah, no, if you put Bruce Pearl and Sean Miller into an Olympic empty swimming pool and just gave him, like, I don't know, they seem like they're big Tai Bo guys. If you just had him do, like, one Tai Bo routine, the entire thing would fill up in about 30 minutes.
Have him do Tai Bo, and then at the end just ask him for their call log on their cell phone, and boom, you got a swimming pool.
And then boom, they float to the surface because there's so much fucking salt water in there now.
All right, so that's the Final Four. PFT, you're in Hong Kong, like we said. Give us an update. Tell us what happened in the rugby tournament. Tell us how the 16-hour flight went. Give us all of it.
Okay, so 16 hours turns out is a long time to do anything. That's my big takeaway number one. I watched 4 movies, and I was like, this is awesome. My flight's almost over. And I looked over at the clock, and I still had, like, 11 more hours left in a plane. So that was kind of a come-to-Jesus moment. Here's a fun fact. We didn't go over the Pacific Ocean. We flew north-south, so I flew over the North Pole, said what's up to Santa, and somehow I ended up south. So I don't know how that works. If the Earth's actually round, you would think that I would have flown east-west, but I don't know. I'm not a geography guy.
By the way, PFT, when you were in the air, Hank and I had many laughs where you just turned to each other for the entire 16 hours and be like, PFT's still got 10 hours to go. We were like, right before we went to bed, we're like, yeah, PFT's still in the air for another 5 hours. We've lived a whole day and he's still in the air.
Yeah, it was weird. I'll be honest with you. I've never sat down that long I think like the longest I've ever been on a plane has been like 6 or 7 hours in the past. This was something else. So I'm really not looking forward to getting back on a plane and doing it all again in about 5 hours.
How good was that refresh when you landed PFT?
It was great. The fart after I landed was an all-timer. Like, this was better than sex, the fart that I let out.
He asked about the refresh.
It was such a sweet release.
He asked about the Twitter refresh, but the fart sounded good.
Yeah, the fart was better than the Twitter refresh. That was the best part of the trip. And then I landed and saw that you guys snuck in George Kittle on Friday's Part of My Take. So that was nice. I listened to him. Pretty worried about my job. He's pretty good.
Yeah, well, no, in his defense, he didn't hope for your death. I asked for his hottest take, and his hottest take was that you were going to die. So that is quite a hot take if you have to rate it.
We're in the prediction game, so I can respect that. If he's going to be on a sports podcast, he has to be able to make some bold takes. So you do you, George, but I'm alive, bitch.
So tell us the thing that we all have been waiting to hear about, the rugby. Did we win?
Yeah. You're very excited about this. So I'll just get started with my Who's Back of the Week. My Who's Back of the Week is USA Rugby. Because we are still in first place in the world.
So we did not win.
We came in, well, we're in first overall. So we're we're top of the table. We're number one. Fiji's number two. Excellent showing from the lads this weekend. Very, very
second
strong
place?
Unit out there. No, we got third, but we're no. What's important to remember is that we're in first place, though. So we finished third, got that third place in the cup trophy bracket. And so, yeah, we were still in first place. Domination.
So you flew 16 hours to not even see a championship game?
That's the story of my life, man. You know what? It's not about the result. It's about the journey. It's about the process. And I had a great time. Here's why this is actually better than a first place finish. Because we're missing arguably our two best players. So Perry Baker's out. Danny Barrett's out. Also, shout out Danny. Got to hang out with him yesterday at the game. So two of our best players are out. And we still finished in third place. That's pretty good.
That sounds like excuses to me. That's weird.
No, so it's pretty – I don't know why you guys don't really understand the scoring system of rugby. It's pretty easy. We went 1-2 in group play, and then we won our first elimination game against New Zealand, lost – so we ended up going, I think, 3-3, but we finished in third place. It was great.
That's 2-3, but yeah, okay, that works. But yeah, no, that sounds like a great time. It's great that we're still in first by finishing third. That makes total sense. Who doesn't finish third and go under 500 and still maintain first place in but we won the trophy anyway a couple
top
weeks
of the table.
Ago. Yeah, we're good.
Top of the table. Yeah, they can never take that cup away from us.
All right, do you have any other Who's Backs?
No, that's really my only one. I just want to say like. Yeah, that's just the one.
Okay.
What, Hank? Hank's, you know what? Hank's in a little pissy mood today. I noticed that you're sick. You're sharing headphones with Big Cat.
You guys are
not working
so
out
salty.
For you.
You
okay.
Just project all
PFT.
Your negative feelings and things on me when I don't do anything. I just sit here in silence with Big Cat. It's like,
that's a good segue.
You're in a bad mood.
That's
like,
a good
oh,
segue, PFT, because like, my Who's Back is Hank's bad mood. So
Hank
is sick. It also is Who's Back, conspiracy theory, Hank. He's convinced that the hotel room itself has made him sick.
The room?
Like
the colors of the wall?
Here's what
the
I know.
The whole vibe in there?
I was in perfect health and condition when I arrived on Thursday. Fully rested, fully hydrated, ready to go. No issues whatsoever. I woke up on Friday, sneezed maybe 35 times in a row. I've had a runny nose, and I have not felt well for the last 2 days.
No, thoughts and prayers.
So the only thing that, you know, the only conclusion that you can come to is that it's the hotel room.
You know, Hank, every time somebody gets sick, it has to start at some point, right? Mm. Like, people just get sick sometimes.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. Like,
ooh, Hank, you know what you should do?
Room,
we should get Hank a neti pot.
That's where it started.
Oh, Hank would love a neti pot. He also is the bad mood Hank is because I kicked his ass in bowling on Saturday night, and he has not been the same since. He couldn't figure out how I was kicking his ass in bowling.
No comment.
Okay. All right, my other Who's Back is this isn't even a Who's Back. We just need to talk about it. Paul Pierce is back, and Dwayne Wade is also back because Paul Pierce said that he's better than Dwayne Wade, and then the internet roasted Paul Pierce. And I have two comments on it. One is Paul Pierce made the ultimate error where Paul Pierce is the perfect guy that if he just kind of stays under the radar, everyone will say, hey, you know who's better than people give him credit for? Paul Pierce. But when he says he's like actively says he's better than someone, people will roast him. And then the other part of it is I'm so fucking sick of Dwayne Wade's retirement tour. Like, this is a little much. It's a little much. He's Dwayne Wade. Like,
this is year three, right? He's been retiring for 3 years.
Yes. It's a little much.
Yeah, come on. It is. It is. We get it, Dwayne Wade. Yeah, I think at the height of Paul Pierce's career, he was still like Dwayne Wade with arthritis. That was his ceiling. Yeah, okay, Hank. Okay. No, I mean he was never like he was never the fastest guy on the court. He was never going to like jam you through the mantle of the earth. He was always just like a good shooter, got good separation. Like a very, very good player, but once you start comparing yourself to somebody that's like so much noticeably better than you, that's why I didn't go as Thor. So this weekend is like a big costume party in Hong Kong, and one of the Lights, Camera, Barstool guys said, you should go dress as Thor. And I was like, I can't do that because I'm so much worse looking than the actual Thor that it'll be a huge self-own if I even try to look like him. Yeah. So that's what Paul Pierce is doing by comparing himself to Dwayne Wade.
Right, and he is the perfect case of a guy that, like, if he just doesn't say this stuff, everyone will say, hey, you know who's better than people thought gave him credit for? Paul Pierce. Like, that's a perfect place to be in life, where people say, hey, you know, he was kind of underrated. Like, we don't give him enough credit. But then when you actively try to get more credit, people will fucking just trash you, and now you've done the reverse, and everyone's like, Paul Pierce was overrated.
Yeah, fall back, bro.
Yeah. Hank, who's your who's back?
My who's back of the week is Country Trap.
Yes.
So we talked about it on the show on Sunday. We said we got to do something to help out Lil Nas, the kid with the Old Town Road song, help him get on Billboard. And lo and behold, it worked. He's now the number one
artist. Our long
artist.
National nightmare is over.
Yeah, we did it thanks to us. Shout out to us. all I'm saying is we talked about it on the show, and now he's number one and number three on the charts. He put out a remix with some country singer or whatever. I don't know how much that had to do with it. But, yeah, Country Trap is back, and it's going to stay around for a while.
Country Trap is back. All right, so let's do our... That song, by the way, is so fire. I can't stop listening to it. I can't stop listening to it.
Will they play it? Will they play it in Hong Kong, PFT?
Oh, yeah, they're playing it. What does it mean, though, Hank? Everyone's talking about Lil Nas X. What does horses in the back mean? Like, what is the horse? Is he talking about, like, his bitches?
No. He's talking about, like, a ranch. He's got horses in the back.
Like, actual horse... The song is just actually about horses.
Yes.
I also
that's pretty cool too.
I also keep thinking that he's taking his horses to a hotel because when you say Old Town Road really fast, I just think he's taking horses to a hotel, which is fucking cool.
That'd be awesome to just take walk a horse into a hotel room.
That takes on a new meaning, though.
Right. Take my horse to the hotel.
Hotel room.
Yeah, hotel and room. Ride. Right. Now it's different. Now we're talking bestiality,
you're just saying Pony,
baby.
By Ginuwine.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
Is Pony? Well, Embrace Debate. Embrace Debate. Is Pony Country Trap?
Hmm.
I think retroactively you have to say yes.
I'd agree so. I would agree. All right, let's do our interview with Sean Marion. Before that, a quick word from a couple of our sponsors.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort, meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today. That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
Okay, here he is, Sean Marion. Okay, we now welcome on very special guest. He's actually a business partner of ours. He also is an NBA champion, four-time All-Star. It is the Matrix, Trix, Sean Marion. Thank you for joining us.
What's up, man? How you doing?
We're doing great. I asked you beforehand. You have three phones. You popped out three phones when we were sitting here.
Yeah.
So explain what the three phones are for.
Family, friends, and business.
Okay. And I'm in the business phone?
Right now, yes.
What do you have to do to cross over into the friends?
I mean...
Friend zone.
I think you kind of want the business phone.
Okay, so okay. I'm good in the business phone.
The friends one, you can ignore texts if you're like, I don't feel like getting back to your business. It's like, that's money.
I really don't want to ignore texts. You know, I'm not that person. You know, if you text me, I try to hit you back. I think it's so disrespectful when somebody sends a message to you. Now, I know everything is kind of a timely matter, and if you're busy, you can't respond to people or something like that. Mm-hmm. But I think when somebody sends you a message and you don't respond in a fashionable manner, you know, I think it's kind of disrespectful.
Right, Dana White had three phones too, right?
Yeah, he did.
But he doesn't have friends, so what's the third one for?
I don't know. That was his burner phone.
Well,
so we're in the business. We own the
I don't take my family phone everywhere I go all the time. Okay. So, like, I'm out doing certain things. I don't – because I know nobody calling me from my family.
Do you always have your business phone?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
Perfect. So I'm in the right phone. So we are in business together. We own the Breakers.
Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not an athlete anymore. I'm a father first, and I'm a businessman. Yeah. So, like, you know, business is all the time.
How are the Breakers doing? We know because we're also owners, but we wanted to test to make sure you knew. How they're doing?
We're doing. I think we had an okay season. I think we could have been better.
Season's over.
I think.
Oh,
I think
fuck.
I feel like we underachieved this year. I felt like we had a good enough team to make the postseason this year.
We did not.
Yeah.
Fuck.
No. So
I'm getting all this information now.
Well, you know, I talked to Matt. You know what I'm saying? So you know, I got to represent the Breakers too.
Yes. Hell yeah.
You know, he made sure I had. I was gonna wear a hat anyway. But he's like, make sure you wear a hat. I'm like, dude, come on now. You know, I know about all advertising and product placement. So, but with that being said, I just feel like we should have made the postseason. I was kind of pissed off we didn't, and I think. We had such a talented team, and I feel like, you know, we didn't get the most out of all our players this year. And then I think Matt ended up sliding into more of a hands-on role, like with the coaching and orchestrating some stuff, like a little bit over halfway through the season. He felt like he needed to step in and be around a little bit more when it comes to just the basketball side, not just the business side,
right?
Which is doing great for us, as you know. Yeah, of course, we know.
Lines of pockets.
So, you know, I got a chance to see something, and it was very interesting. I'm watching the kind of like the turnover right now in New Zealand, because, you know, it's kind of a little bit behind times there, I got the chance to watch the first game there this season, and I got a chance to go over and watch us play in Melbourne.
Okay.
And you can see the night and day difference over there.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Because that's more of a basketball country to a certain degree. We're more of a,
Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
Lord of the Rings. Film.
A couple little tips that I've just been bouncing around to improve the Breakers a little bit. One, just try to get all the high school players be like, hey, come over, play professionally in New Zealand for a year instead of going to college and playing for free.
Mm.
So you get like all the, you know, kids that want to get paid want to wet the beak a little bit. Two, we should have celebrity lookalikes that are courtside in the first row. So we got a dude that looks like Spike Lee.
Yep.
That's right there yelling at all the players.
Drake.
Okay. We got Drake. We got a Jack Nicholson
guy
that's sitting at, like, right next to the benches talking shit.
Okay.
Three, you should just play.
Oh, no.
Why not?
I retired for a reason.
Right, but you could probably... Do you think you get out there and dominate?
No.
Really?
I will give them guys credit. You know what I'm saying? Don't slack on the NBL. You know, I think them guys are professionals. You know, I'm not saying all of them are top players, but there are some guys in there that can go out there and probably hold their own in the NBA with no problems at all.
Do you still play, like...
Leisurely?
Yeah.
I play pickup here and usually.
Yeah? How many times a week do you dunk?
Do I what?
Dunk.
Man, I ain't dunked in a minute. I might dunk once last week. I got to be feeling really good.
Okay.
I got to be on a lot of drugs.
Feeling, like, PEDs. Yeah, exactly.
You're actually the perfect person to ask this. Is it better to be wet from three or to just dunk on somebody?
Oh, I mean, it just depends. I feel like, when I was playing, dunk on somebody.
Yeah. Yeah,
but what about
now,
being real wet?
Now,
yeah, real wet,
wet from the three pointers.
Yes, absolutely. All right, so I want to talk about you have a fascinating career because you were all over the place. You, won with the Mavs. You kind of revolutionized basketball with the Suns. But I want to start at the beginning: McDonald's All American, and then going to a Division II school. What happened there? And then you go to obviously transfer to UNLV. But that's, I can't imagine there are many people who've had that path.
So, I remember mentioning I didn't play in the game. So, okay. That's the thing, though. So, like, we was trying to dissect and see what guys that was actually didn't play in that McDonald's High School All-American game.
Right.
And what kind of careers they had and how far did they go.
So wait, what year was it? I'll look it up right now.
So I mean, no, I'm just overall. Period. They didn't go. That wasn't a McDonald's All American projected, because McDonald's All Americans have played a game are projected to be stars.
Prayers, right. Yeah.
So much stars.
They're going to be Kentucky.
Go to these prominent but dominant schools, and they have supposed to have luxurious careers. A lot of them don't pan out. A lot of McDonald's Americans don't pan out and do nothing. You know, some of them don't even go to the pros. But that was the format that everybody was kind of thinking about and saying, because you see them throwing the highlights up there all the time. They showing on TV, ESPN Classics now. You know, they're showing the games and showing stuff. And I was wondering, but I didn't. So, you know, I went to junior college for 2 years, and then I transferred to UNLV for a year. And, you know, I mean, I know a couple guys. I know a few guys, quite a few guys that did go junior college route to the pros.
Did you have offers from other Division I places, I would assume?
Yes. Right, actually, I wanted to go to North Carolina.
Okay.
I really did. But Dean Smith retired after my second year in junior college. So he had a scholarship available, but he ended up retiring before I got there. So I was like,
so you're like, I'm not going. Playing for Brad Jordan.
Yeah. I wasn't going. So, yeah. I you know what? I'm going to go somewhere warm.
Yes.
I went West Coast.
Yeah.
Finger. What's up with your finger? Your
man,
pinky?
It's been like that, man. It's one of my trademarks.
It's like Booger McFarlane. Have you ever thought about just getting it pop back into place?
You
can't do that.
You can't. I can hold it straight.
Yeah.
But you can't. I have to get a pin put in order to go back.
And
then it won't guarantee it's gonna stay
because
if I'm still playing, if it ever get hit, it go back.
Yeah. Shit.
Battle wounds, baby. Come on.
Yeah, that actually is a badass thing. So you go UNLV to the draft. You were actually planning on staying for another year, but you end up, you know, everyone's
I could have came out of junior college. Right. I was academic All-American. I was running up player of the year and player of the year one. Yeah, so like, yeah, I could have came out of junior college.
Yeah.
So, you know, I was like, you know what? I want to go experience D1 one year.
Yeah. What was it like playing in Vegas? Was it like a lot of distractions?
Actually, no, man. You know, it was pretty easy, actually. You know, I think when you think about Vegas, think about the Strip, think about casinos and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it was pretty like any other school. You know, once you get on campus, you get into campus life, you know, and you play a sport, you know, you into it, you know.
Yeah.
And then once you decide on if you're going to try to come out and go pro, that's when all the other stuff starts.
Right.
A little fun fact about, what's the name of the basketball arena there at UNLV?
Thomas and Mack.
So fun fact about that, one time we were trying to go in to see Floyd Mayweather's celebrity basketball game.
Okay.
We were too high, and we just walked around the building like six times, and we couldn't find the entrance. So and they were like, no, it's across the street and under a tunnel to get inside. Did you ever have to go through that tunnel?
Yes, we did, but it depends. So they remodeled it. So they've been remodeled since I've been
in
the school there.
That's why I got confused.
So they have an add-on on the backside of it as well. So they added the women's part on it as well, too. So they done some remodeling
over
there.
Yeah. It's hot out there. It was like late August. Yeah. It was hot.
Yeah.
It was really
hot. Not a good experience for us.
So the Suns. The 7 Seconds or Less Suns are one of my favorite teams of all time. Mm-hmm. Did you, when Mike D'Antoni showed up, were you like, what the hell? Why is he making us shoot so fast? Why is he making us run so fast? It's like, it obviously completely kind of changed. Basketball today looks a lot like what you guys were doing and not what happened before that.
Well, you know, it's an interesting story you say that, because he was actually assistant coach then.
Right.
So he was kind of brought in, kind of, you know how the pattern works sometimes. The guy's brought in and sooner or later he's going to be the coach. They groom him a little bit before they don't. Sometimes they don't just give the keys to the house to him. You know what I'm saying? So let him groom him for a year or so and then give him keys over to the house. So, but I mean, I love D'Antoni. I always shot extra. He was one of the coaches I actually worked with a lot, you know, before he got the head coaching job. You know what I'm saying? Because once you become head coaching job, you don't really do the stuff. All the assistant coaches do the stuff that you were doing before.
Right.
You know? And the workout, individual workouts and shooting and stuff like that. But, you know, he had a vision. He had a mindset. And it was basically a lot of it basically was kind of, it was up to me, I guess, to decide on. Like, he's like, look, I need you to play power forward, basically. And I was like, really? You know, I mean, I wasn't too enthusiastic about doing it at first because, you know, I mean, I'm 230 and 6'7". You know, the power forward at the time was the most dominant position in the league. Mm. You know, Kevin Garnett, Tim Duncan, everybody. It was the most dominant position in the league. So, you know, you got a small 6'7", 230-pound skinny boy trying to go up against these big guys. But I was like, okay, he said, we can do this and you can do this and we can win.
And now you would be, in today's NBA, you're a center.
Oh.
Easy.
I mean,
like, that's how it's kind of changed since the 7 Seconds or Less.
Yeah,
you're like Supermax player right now.
Oh, man, yeah, you would have made so much money. Get damn.
But you know, that's what I'm saying. You think about the game now. Look at the evolution of the game now. How much talent the bigs have now.
Yes. Like,
a lot of bigs now are bringing the ball up the court. They shoot all. Everybody's mm-hmm. shooting threes now. Mm-hmm. So I mean, because they think it's speeding the game up.
Right.
And it's kind of interesting when you sit there and you just look at it and like, damn, look how good. And now the most dominant position in the league is the point guard.
Right.
The guards are the most dominant by far. But the bigs are so talented now, and it's just like, man, you know, it's like, wow, you know, you can't deny them. You know,
do you ever think about how like you guys kind of started that? Because it was you know, I'm thinking about the Pistons versus Lakers final, which was terrible, and the games were played in the 70s and 80s, and then
it's a physical game, man.
You guys come along and start playing super fast. Maybe not a lot of defense. That must have been fun, by the way.
But we did play defense. That's a sad.
A little bit.
It got overshadowed because we were scoring so much.
Okay. And
scoring
in most, that's a good way to spin
it. Scoring, it's just like Golden State right now.
Yeah.
So they go on scoring runs.
They play better defense than you guys did. Yeah.
No, I don't think so.
I mean, Steve Nash, I mean, come on.
I mean, okay. Well, you can compare and contrast all you want.
You play defense.
I mean, we all play defense.
Amari play defense.
Yeah. We all play defense. I think especially some guys play horrible individual defenders but great team defenders.
Yeah.
I mean –
Explain that.
That's another great way to spin it, yeah.
No, explain that, because
that's a different mindset, though. Like, you know, just take Steve. Steve was a great he wasn't the best on-ball defender, but he's a great team defender. So he knew exactly where our concepts was and how to help make it easier for our team to help him guard. Because mm-hmm. it's like me guarding. Our most of the philosophies when it comes to a good defense and the defensive teams, the mindset is, I'm going to guard my man and half of your man.
Okay.
So that means you automatically got another man guarding you, because if you're guarding your man and half of your man now, so it equals another man. So you got help.
Right.
And you develop that trust, and that's how you become solid in defense. And when we got stopped, we needed to. We had good enough defenders that, you know what I'm saying, was able to, you know what I'm saying, do a lot of different things. And of course, there's ways you can hide guys, you know what I'm saying, and especially when you got a guy who's probably not a big scorer and they don't give the ball to him much. So you probably try to put a lesser defender on him.
Mm-hmm.
And especially if he's a main guy that scores a lot and do a lot of things on the offensive end, well, you can hide him on there. You know,
right.
You see a lot of teams doing it. You know, James Harden does it a lot right now because he extends so much energy on defense
right.
that he's not guarding. He's not guarding his position or main scorer because it's just too much on him.
Right. You guys played in a couple of my favorite NBA playoff series of all time, the ones against the Spurs.
Okay.
When it was Sun Spurs. And I remember distinctly that when Robert Horry, like, hip-checked Steve Nash into the bench, it was almost like blows. Like, it was almost like a full-on brawl at that point.
I mean, it was a hard foul, and, you know, it was messed up how it happened. But, you know, everybody speculate thinking that was the year we should have won the championship, went to the finals and won the championship. Mm-hmm. I don't. If you know
really?
Anything,
really?
No.
What year was the team better?
The year after that.
Okay.
We lost in this. We went first. We went seven games against the Lakers. We had swept the Lakers for the regular season, but we lost the last game of the season because we wanted to play them in the first round. And I was like, we ended up going seven games. We won seven games against them, but then we went seven games against the Clippers that year. They was really good with Sam Cassell, Elton Brand, Chris Kaman, and them. And then we ended up losing six games against Dallas. And the only reason we lost, I would say that was the tiredest I ever been throughout my career. I was physically, mentally drained because I was going from Sam Cassell to Elden Brand to Chris Kaman, from Kobe to Lamar to Ron Artest, you know, to all these different guys. Then I had to go against Dirk, and then my body, I was shut. I was tired. I was dead tired. And we didn't use our bench at all. We was playing so many minutes, dude. Like it was nuts. Like
that's fascinating to me that you elected to take on Kobe and the Lakers in the first round of the playoffs.
Yeah, that's what a lot of teams do that. You know, I mean, I'll be honest with you. They think the matchup is better. They think we beat them three times this year. We're gonna lose the four. If we lose this game, we can. They try to match up against a team that they can guarantee win.
Yeah,
they don't guarantee in the postseason. You just don't know.
Right. Yeah.
Injuries happen. Things happen. And even though you're playing the same team, it's hard to be a team. You know what I'm saying? Seven times, dude.
Right.
Like, I think. All the major league sports, you know, NBA championship is probably one of the hardest ones to win.
Yeah, because the adjustments that come to the game are insane.
Yes.
Yeah,
Was it more tiring to play that style of basketball that you played on the Suns, or was it more fun because you know you get the ball down court, you shoot it quick, and then just get back?
I mean, all of it's miles on your body, man, regardless of how you're doing it, you know. But, you know, for me, it was double because I had bigger guys leaning on me. You know, I think people don't understand the physical aspects of the game then. When you have to guard a bigger guy, it wears and tears on you.
Yeah.
It slowly but surely will break you down. And, but, you know, I was able to use my quickness and my athleticism to a certain degree. And, you know, I mean, I held my own against all those big guys very, very strong. But at the end of the day, sooner or later, you know, you do break down. People don't understand it. The game of basketball, you know, we like my agent, rest in peace, Dan Fagan. He loved this terminology. He loved to say, you know, you're like a car. Mm-hmm. Sooner or later, the starter might stop working. The right. Brakes go out. You know what I'm saying? You get a flat tire, you know. So, like, athletes are like, you know, cars. We assume like you're going to break down. And,
right.
And, you know, you can get it fixed. You know what I'm saying? You get a little fixed, but, you know, once you get it fixed, sometimes it never start off the same way it quite started when you had it brand new. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So sooner or later, you break down.
What would you do later in your career to get it fixed up? Like, what would you do to
change? I try to maintain as much as I can. You know, instead of me, you know, saying taking the longer break off in the season, you have to. The older you get, you have to continually stay in shape. Mm-hmm. You can't really get out of shape because it's that much harder to get your body going and get into shape. You know,
right.
But you know, you still gotta monitor how you doing, what you do exactly. But I mean, listen, you know, everybody's different to a certain degree, and you know, I knew what I need to do to keep myself in shape and in tune. So I just try to follow my regimen and keep at it.
Did you ever think that you were able to get? You were able to score more in the NBA because everyone was like, man, this guy can't shoot the way his shot goes so fucking ugly.
Not at all. That's funny.
I mean,
not
it's
at
the
all.
Truth. Like, I think everyone, it's the best every time one. You it's made best a shot, I was ever. Like, holy
yeah.
shit.
Yeah, it's the best one
in.
Ever. I would beat the shit out of everybody. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I would bust everybody ass.
Did anyone try to fix your shot?
Never. Never.
I mean, it worked, so there's no like real never. Fixing. It
you're
just
like
looked ugly.
The Jim Furyk of basketball. Like, he's unorthodox, but you can shoot the lights out. So, but you never had a coach that thought that he was smarter than you that was like, okay, bring your elbow in,
yeah,
balance eyes, elbow, follow
yeah.
through.
Hell no. You know why? Because they couldn't shoot either. The fuck you going to tell me what to do? But look, you know what's funny, though? You know what's really funny, though? Like, can you name me two guys in the league that actually shoot the same?
Yeah, probably not. You're right.
Never.
Everyone's got their own little quirks and intricacies
no,
and everything.
No. So who?
Yeah,
so,
I mean, LeBron doesn't even shoot the same free throws over from fucking one free throw to the next. He does a different thing.
But the fact is that everybody got this image of a picture perfect jump shot, but like
it's not yours.
It's not yours either, though.
Well, that's true.
who's to say? It's not. As long as it works. If it don't broke, don't fix it.
That's
right.
True.
If it's not broke, don't fix it.
Who is the most difficult big man that you were ever asked to guard?
For a full game, probably, I mean, all of them was hard, though. I mean.
In, like, different ways. Like, obviously, Dirk guarding him was different than
Dirk a little
a bigger
different because Dirk don't really post up. Dirk, I had to make him feel uncomfortable. You know, that's my guy. You know what I'm saying? I try to run him, too, because I was faster than he was. But once he got the ball and he got to the sweet spot.
Mm-hmm.
And that custom fadeaway, there's no way I'm blocking that.
Nobody can guard that.
No, I'm not blocking that. So I just had to make him a little uncomfortable, as off balance as possible, and not let him get into a groove. But it's hard. Like you said, you know, I mean, he does have a height advantage on me. So, like, I mean, like, damn, like, just.
Who would win one-on-one? You guys used to play one-on-one all the time,
oh,
right?
We had some. I mean, and during the final championship year, yeah, we played one-on-one. It was
yeah.
a great game. So,
who would
know.
Win?
I mean, we both won.
Who would win more?
That sounds like a
yeah,
that's
no.
Dirt.
No.
Sounded like Dirk. You paused.
If you played 10 times, who would win the majority of the time?
No, I think we was about half and half. Just
that's no way.
Yeah, why is that?
Because if you won more, you would say, I won.
You would say, I kicked his ass.
Yeah, and if because you lost, you're
it's
50-50.
I'm keeping it 100. No, you asked a limited question.
Okay, you played 100 times, it's 50-50?
No, we ain't played that much. We only played in the postseason.
Okay.
And we only played because it was certain matchups that we needed to do. And we ain't going that much because we got this long season. It's too much work.
Okay.
We exerting more energy in the games than you do like that. But, you know, we spend a lot of time. But especially when we're playing teams that he may have to match up on a small forward, that's when we play one-on-one.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it helped to get him because Dirk was actually a great defender for us in the championship run.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
People like, you know, but like you said, though, it's not all about individual defense, but team defense.
Team defense.
He was amazing.
Did you ever learn any German to talk shit to him when you were playing?
No, he'll say something occasionally, but like no, Dirk is a comedian himself though, man. You know, he's a great guy, man, and you know, we he's awesome, man. What more can I say? He's an awesome guy.
With that championship run with the Mavs in that NBA Finals, you basically shut down LeBron. And I wanted to talk about that game four that somehow people just kind of forget, but I'm going to throw it out there. LeBron had 8 points. 8 points in that game four. Did you feel it that he was, like, not part of the game, that he wasn't into the game? Because he was basically eliminated in that game. And you did hold him. I wrote it down. 24 points, 20 points, 17, 8, 17, 21. I mean, that's LeBron at right at the height of his powers, scoring less than 25 points a game.
So,
and you're playing him one-on-one.
So, look, you know, you did that stat. You should actually go back and watch the game. Actually, how many actually – ask yourself, how many minutes did I actually guard LeBron?
Okay, don't do this. Please, just tell us that you shut down LeBron.
You're the LeBron stopper.
Like, don't do this.
No, I'm going to give my guys credit because that was a team championship, and I'm going to tell you why. I'm just going to tell you. So the first two games of the series, I was guarding LeBron heavily pretty much. You know what I'm saying?
Me 24 and 20 points. That's pretty damn good.
So me, first two, but it was between me, Deshaun Stevenson, and Jay Kidd to a certain degree. But I went to guarding D Wade more after that. I think it was more actually some of the second game going into the third game because D Wade had a post up game and he was able to post up our guards with no problem.
Okay.
So I went to guard him more and everybody else guarded LeBron.
Okay, but
I started on him, but I wouldn't know him long.
Could you sense though, like, because this is obviously LeBron before he wins a championship, and the narrative was he can't win the big one and all that bullshit. Could you sense that there was a little doubt in his eye, especially a game? I mean, the fact he scored 8 points in a finals game, I would imagine that he wasn't locked in the LeBron that you've seen in the last 5 years.
I mean, we had a great game plan, man. You know, we knew exactly what, you know, everybody do scouting reports. You know what the scouting reports are. You know, we know what tendencies are and what guys like to do, don't do from everybody in the league. We get those. They got all these plus minus and shit.
Yeah.
It's like, look, they tell you exactly if somebody's going right 75% of the time or if they're going and what the percentage is they're going left 75% of the time. They tell you what the exactly percentages are. So if they're going left, he's going to do this. Over 9 out of 10 times. If you're going right, he's gonna do this 9 out of 10 times. Mm-hmm. So what? We're gonna force it to where we want him to go.
Right.
Based off of that. And then over a full season or 2 years or whatever, after research they do on that stuff, it's pretty accurate.
Right.
So you get that guy doing what you wanna do and you understand that, and that's the thing about being a veteran team. We know our game plan, we know our principles. Coaching them, we had a coach on the court and a coach off the court. Jay Kidd was our own on the court coach, and Carlisle was our coach off the court. Mm-hmm. The subbing and stuff he did, it was so immaculate in how they do it and how we prepare for every team we played against, dude. Like, man, we could have beat anybody that year.
Were you guys mad that LeBron made fun of Dirk for having the flu?
I didn't care about that shit.
Yeah, a little bit?
No.
Mm-mm. That was kind of fucked up.
Yeah. I mean, listen, you know, everybody got shits and giggles all over the place. So.
You think we blow stuff out of proportion too much, like the media?
Oh, all the time.
Yeah.
No, the cramp game that he had, you remember that?
I think sometimes y'all sugarcoat stuff and y'all know the truth, so y'all try to come up with y'all truth.
Yep. Yeah.
You know, and
but that's a lot of fun.
It's fun.
You tried doing it?
Sometimes I do
it. Yeah, you got to.
But for the most part, I try to keep it 100, though. You know, I've always been a 100 guy. You know, you ask me something, I try to tell you the exact 100. That's all I've been. When I do interviews from games for my whole career, I'm like, that's how I feel. You know what I'm saying? You can like it, you don't like it. You know what I'm saying? I'm me. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. I'm not changing for just because of TVs or cameras in front of me. I don't do shit for no attention. I'm doing it because of who I am.
So keep it 100. Is LeBron a bad teammate?
No.
But
no.
Now keep it 80.
I mean, like, you know, there's certain things about a lot of players I don't like, and then there's certain things, I mean, that I do like, but he's not a bad teammate.
Yeah.
Did he ever try to make you read a book?
No.
He never had, like, team book day where he handed out books. He's like, read The Godfather. I'm reading it. There are a lot of life lessons you can take out of this.
No, that was before some other shit. He wasn't doing that when I was in Cleveland.
What cities, besides obviously L.A. and Miami, what cities should we look out for when guys are on the road and we like, all right, they probably had a late night. We can bet against them.
I mean, listen, I mean, all fairness aside, the only cities that really don't have a nightlife is what's – but you can find something. You really want to find something, you can find something.
Yeah, but, like Milwaukee, I mean, and Utah.
I mean, Milwaukee's 45 minutes away from Chicago.
Yep. So that's true. So,
Oklahoma City maybe.
You know what? I went out. I did go out in Oklahoma, but I went to a strip club in Oklahoma. And it was kind of – I'm being – I'm keeping it 100.
Keeping it 100.
I found a strip club out there. It
but
was
what
okay.
What cities – like, you know that if you're – like, was Dallas that city where the team coming into the city, you knew that they probably went out and they probably went out hard?
If they're there for two nights, yes.
Yeah.
But a lot of times, if they come in on back-to-back, if you're going out – on a back-to-back, you're thirsty as hell. Right. you're super thirsty.
Yeah.
But now, look, you don't have to go out now. Everybody, I think there was an article came out last year said guys don't have to go out no more. Everybody's on social media.
They just come to your hotel.
Yeah.
You don't have to go to Jaguars until 3 o'clock in the morning. Yeah.
Look at you.
You know about it. You ever been to the breakfast buffet at Jaguars?
No.
It's terrible. It's awful food. Awful food, but great scenery.
Yeah,
I went there a long time ago. I've been there one time.
Because you notice when you were playing in Miami, teams that would come in and you'd be like, "Yo, you guys were at Liv all night last night."
Oh yeah, we could tell. But you know, sometimes it just depends on what guys are out. The real good guys, the pros, are probably not out. They especially if they know it's a game that counts for the regular season and regular, saying for their schedule and stuff. You know, I think a lot of the vets keep track of that stuff like that. And like you said, though, it depends on. Some guys be searching for their attention, so that's when happens.
Yeah, how many games in a regular season would you say like guys are giving max effort?
I mean, honestly, the season is so long, man. It's too hard to give it.
Out playoff
man,
level.
Like yeah, it's too hard. You know what I mean? But I mean, I played hard every time I went on the floor. So like I just took it like you just don't know. You know,
right?
And I don't play that game. So I feel like when you give yourself a chance to go out and play hard, you always give yourself a chance to do good. You know what I'm saying? Give your team a chance to win. Mm-hmm. But most of the time, I don't think guys sit out there not to go hard. I think it's just more of so it's just because it's so many games, you get tired, you get mentally tired.
Load management.
Yeah. You get mentally tired sometimes, and then there's gonna be some games you might don't have, you might not be that alert, but you playing hard, but it just seemed like
you're not locked in.
Yeah. You're just not high. Yeah.
You're stoned.
I hope not.
I actually think the NBA does a good job in terms of their marijuana policy. I don't actually know what it is, but I'm just gonna say that like there's a problem in the NFL. The only problem they have with marijuana tests being flagged up is like it makes the league look bad when you suspend a player for smoking weed. Nobody would give a shit if all the players are smoking weed all the time. We only know about it because you suspend them. Wow. Like I've never heard of an NBA player getting.
Let me ask you this question: you think if everybody was smoking all the time, you think the game wouldn't suffer?
Yeah,
guys being out there. Yeah,
Possibly. If they're smoking before NFL, I think there are definitely some players that play in the regular
like the late
season.
90s NBA.
I mean, I wouldn't doubt it. I mean, I'm pretty sure I was guys doing drugs before the game.
Yeah.
But no, I'm going to do that. You know, Advil was my drug.
There you go.
Yeah. It tastes really good, by the way. Advil. I had Advil last weekend.
Yeah.
Yeah, it tastes like candy. I wanted to have more, but I was like, no, PFT, it's medicine.
Man,
yeah.
Three of those, boy, keep me awake and alive.
Yes.
For 48 minutes.
Real party guy, yeah.
Are you mad at all that you got the nickname Matrix and then they made three of them and they just got worse and worse as they went along?
I love the Matrix movie.
Even the third one sucked, dude.
Awesome. Man, you suck.
Oh, there we go. But I'm saying, like, that's your name. Like, the first one's awesome.
So you
get the nickname.
So yeah, the first one came out, I got the nickname.
Right.
That my first year ever coming into the game. That's just crazy.
Great nickname. Who gave it to you?
Kenny Smith
gave it to you.
Yeah.
And then the second one comes out, it's okay.
It was good.
I've never seen it in the movie
all
theaters.
Of them.
Yeah, third one comes out, sucked. And you're still named
the
Matrix.
That's your preference, though. Uh-huh. So, listen, I'm going to ask you this question. They don't make three movies of any series if they suck.
They could.
Not typically, they don't.
No, you're not totally wrong on that.
They don't put money. They don't put money in movies like that for them to suck.
Yeah.
If they're all that stuff is predicated on numbers.
Godfather 3, that sucked.
They made it three, though.
Yeah.
Two right. was good enough. Two was good enough for them to make up.
The third one always sucks.
about Lethal Weapon 3?
They made like 10 of those, right?
That shit was good, though. You can't lie. That shit was good.
The first three Star Wars were bad, right? I don't know. I never saw them.
Star Wars. I like Star Wars. Star Wars is good.
You do?
Yes.
Nerd.
Wow.
don't
in the NBA?
Oh, wow. I'm checking out your T-shirt over there.
Yeah, so this is a Breakers shirt.
Yeah,
so
I don't have that one.
Yeah, this is a brand new one. Well, actually, we might have one out there. We made this for the shooting down in Christchurch. So the money is going to two charities down in
Zealand. That's the one. Okay, that's the shirt you made for that.
Yeah,
okay.
So through the Breakers, Maddie helped me out with this. So yeah, we'll get you one of these if you want one.
So what when you did play with Cleveland and LeBron, what was it like? Were you in LeBron's little inner circle? Did you ever get in?
Yeah, it was in the circle, yeah.
You were in?
Yeah.
I don't know if you were in.
Yeah.
You had to hesitate.
No, I didn't hesitate.
Like, did you get on? Like, were you, was he?
That's so fucked up you said some shit like that, though.
Let me ask you this. Were you ever in a picture out to dinner where LeBron used the caption La Familia?
He didn't do those
pictures. You were never in. You were never in the inner circle.
So that,
sorry, Sean.
So fortunately, Those pictures never happened when I was in Cleveland.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That was before his taking pictures?
That was the next year.
Keeping people in and out of
that
the circle?
The following year.
Kevin Love.
Okay. What's he like as a teammate? We joke around a lot about LeBron. I actually think LeBron's the greatest player of all time.
Yeah, I think he's a great teammate. I think it's the difference between being off-the-court teammate and on-the-court teammate, though. So I feel like, you know, on court, though, like one of the things I mean, I'm just going to be real candid and honest, yeah. though. I think he shows his teammates up a little bit too much on the court.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, that's just part of him. And, you know, he kind of feel like he earned that, and I mean that's him. You know, I can't. I mean, look, the dude is what he is. You know, right. LeBron James is
he owns the NBA. He basically owns the NBA.
Yeah, but that's one of the things I don't like he does. You know what I'm saying? But for the most part, man, what can you say? The guy is, you know, saying out here doing some amazing things on his court.
Is he a hard worker? Like when it comes to putting in the minutes in practice?
Oh yeah, he can work out. Yes, he is. He gonna get in the gym.
Did you ever take a wine bath with Amari Stoudemire?
No.
Do you ever think about it?
Never.
He ever invites you over and he's just sitting in a fucking like tub of Merlot? He's like, Sean,
he just got into wine in the last couple of years.
What's
dude?
Up? No, but
those pictures are just they're ridiculous of Stoudemire. He's got it probably takes like 30 bottles of wine to fill up that tub.
Yeah.
Oh. It's hey, good man. For the animal. You know, he has his own wine over there now in Israel. So
the
like
tub wine?
Know, listen, I mean, he's doing good things over there. I like it. Like
drink Amari's tub wine.
Yeah, it's actually smart.
Yeah.
What do you think? You think the NBA has a wine problem? All these guys are drinking a lot of wine.
No, I love wine. So,
okay.
Hey.
Sheesh.
Mm. Why not?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, yeah, it just seems like LeBron's doing bad for the kids, you know? Like, everyone's drinking wine all the time.
He's giving his kids wine, yeah. You ever see him, like, fill up his kids, like, sippy cup with a little Chardonnay or something like that?
Never. I ain't never seen it. But, hey, anything is possible.
Yeah. What were you doing in Toronto this past weekend?
I did – it was cool. I did an appearance with this little charity that they raised money for this hospital there that it helps I can't think of the name of it right now. It come to me in a little bit. But they raised money because they already got free health care there.
Right.
But – that healthcare only covers so much. So this hospital that they're raising money for covers everything else.
Okay.
And they broke down the scenario, how they deal with it. It was a great turnout, too. They had a lot of people. There was a lot of retired players there that came in. And it was cool. It was fun.
What does that extra pass feel like? That must be the best feeling in all of basketball. Because that was the 7 seconds or less Suns. Like, the whole mantra is it's easier to make a quick, you know, an extra pass, get someone
it was,
that much more of a wide open shot.
I mean, yeah, because if you run the floor. So our everything was on we did out there was predicated on the wings running the floor. Mari running down the center of the court. Mari ran the rim and rim.
Yep.
I trailed for the trail three, and Joe and Q were running the corners hard. So when they did that, it put so much pressure. The defense is already sagged in. So either and then if I come in and say a drag, a lot of times there is no help. So it's going to be a wide open three. And if they suck to make, they rotate to me, I'm going to kick into the corner.
That extra pass, though, that's, I mean, the Golden State, when you're talking about Golden State basketball, that's them making the extra pass.
It is sweet.
Like someone has an open shot, and then they make that extra pass for a wide open
shot. So we did some of the stuff they did kind of somewhat, but they took it to another level. Like, we were, you know, Steve was the head of our snake, you know what I'm saying? So we did a lot of probing, you know what I'm saying, dribbling around and did pick and rolls with Mari. And if they tagged him, he'd just fill a corner in for a three. It was just quick and simple hit. A lot of quick hitters.
Yeah, Steph, you see Steph do the baseline stuff
like
that.
But now they running though. So now they put movement in it. They took it to another level from where we started.
It helps that they have two of the best 3-point shooters of all time.
Yeah, but that whole man, mindset of you know, anybody can be a point guard mentality, and everybody can make a pass from pop, you know what I'm saying, system. Man, it just makes the game that much easier.
Did you ever tell Steve Nash, hey man, just cut your hair?
No.
Yeah.
And he had that mop up there for a couple. It looked like it would get in his eyes all the time.
It
just
was
like greasy, and
you keep doing this.
Yeah.
Were you ever nervous that he was actually injured when he would just go lay down with all the heating pads on the baseline?
No, he had a tight back. His back used to get tied up on him a lot. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, he got that. He actually got that fixed, though. Our training staff out there was amazing. You know, Aaron and Mike out there, they did a great job out there.
You guys were known for that. That was, like, a big that got free agents, you know, like, hey, go to Phoenix and you can play a little bit longer.
Listen, you know, we got Grant came out there. He was having them problems with the ankle, man. He played, man. He came out there and played some great years out there and was able to continue it going to LA. Then, you know, Shaq came out there hurt. Got them right there back on the court. And they got some – listen, you know, it's a few other teams that actually do a lot of stuff with them. And that's the company back then was called National Academy of Sports Medicine, NASM. Now Mike Clark, the owner, Fusionetics. I'm shouting them out. Yeah, Fusionetics. Yeah, it's some awesome stuff. Awesome stuff, man.
Wait, did you cross paths with Shaq or no? Were you on the
same team? No. I never played with Shaq. Okay. You know what I'm saying? We swapped.
Yeah. You swapped like all teams. Miami, Cleveland, Phoenix. Yeah. Like,
we swapped. Yeah, we swapped.
All right, my last question, SeatGeek question. Put in promo code TAKEY at $10 off your SeatGeek purchase. Do you ever pull up old highlights and just watch yourself and like, damn, I was really good?
I have. People send me stuff too.
Good. All right.
Yeah,
I know. I feel like that's something that most athletes do but probably don't want to talk about.
No. But yeah, I look at some stuff. I'm like, man, boy.
You got to start doing, Boozer puts up mixtapes of himself on his Instagram, and he's always like, shout out this guy who made it for me, but it's probably himself. So that's what you need to start doing. Be like, damn,
I ain't got
good.
Time to
like,
do
shout
all
out
that,
this.
Though.
We'll make them for you.
Okay.
And then you put them up and be like, shout out to Part of My Take for making this mixtape
I'll do
for
that.
Me.
No problem.
Yeah. Hold that. Yeah. Right?
Right.
I'll do that.
Yeah.
No problem.
So you do watch yourself, though, and you're like, damn,
oh,
that was
I'll look
awesome.
At some highlights, though. Yeah, I definitely know. Why not? You know?
Yeah. What's your favorite play that you've ever made?
Ooh. Let me see.
Do you have any game winners in the NBA?
Yeah, I got some. I think 4 or 5.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's got to be the best feeling in the world.
Yeah.
How long does that last? I always wonder, like, you hit a game winner. Are you still buzzing for, like, 4 hours after? Two hours? Like, what is it like in the locker room instantly right after?
I mean, depending on what year it was, shit, I probably wouldn't grab me a couple beers right after.
Yeah, right.
That was one of the things people don't, I got used to. Because a lot of people don't know this, though. Like, I had a situation my rookie season, and my first trip to Miami ever, man, I got wasted. And, man, my vets had me drinking Goldschläger. Mm-hmm. You know what that is?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
So you know what that is. So I was hungover for 2 days. Coach Skiles, because I remember this, Scott Stiles, like, y'all can't take the rookie out no more. So it's like he can't handle that shit. And I was like, okay. So, like, I played. You could just tell I was drunk. You know what I'm saying? It was just that because it's really aggressive and strong drink, and I had never had it before. So,
right.
And it was a late night, too. And I don't know how much I drank, but I was toe up. But it happens, part of it. You know, it happens. And, you know, but after that, I made a pledge. Never, I stopped drinking during the season.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's no awesome. I just assumed.
But then. It really changed once I got, you know, my second deal and I got around more vets, older vets, older guys.
You learn how to handle it a little bit.
You learn how to handle it. You learn how to, you know what I'm saying, manage it well. So, I, you know, having a couple of beers after the game, cold ones, it's part of it.
Yeah, just a couple
of cocktails. Because I'm burning it off before I get to the hotel. You know what I'm saying? So before we get on the 5, I'm burning off 2 beers already before I got to the hotel.
You lost 81-78. You played 18 minutes. You were 0-7 from the field.
When?
That game in Miami, your rookie year.
Was it?
Yeah. You were 0-7 from the field. You did get 8 rebounds. That's decent.
Hey.
The ball just bounced to you.
But 0-7 from the field. That's hilarious.
Did we win that game?
You lost that game 81-78. I just looked it up. That's fucking play. You played 18 minutes. So Scott Skiles is probably like, fuck this.
Oh, the rook is drunk.
Get him out.
Uh-huh. The rook is drunk.
Yeah, because that's drunk. Less minutes than you played. Like, you were playing a lot more minutes that part of your season. And then all of a sudden, you got 18 minutes.
Yeah, I think I got hurt right after that, too, though.
That's funny. Yeah. That's really funny.
I think I went down for like 30 games.
So wait, are you still working? Are you working in some capacity for the Mavericks right now?
Yes, I am. I'm an ambassador with the Mavericks and with the NBA.
That sounds like an awesome job.
Yeah, it's cool. Wait, man.
It's like the Scottie Pippen job. You just can't get a check for sitting sidelines. Right? Ryan Sorg just gives Scottie Pippen a check just to chill.
Now, I talk, me and Cuban, I talk to him all the time. That's my guy. They got some great things going on down with the organization, man. You know, I go out there, make some appearances, talk to some kids and, you know, some coaches and stuff, man. It's just cool, you know. It's kind of at your leisure to a certain degree, and it's a cool gig, man. I think you know, it's ways to stay around the game and be involved, mm-hmm. and you know, and it's cool. I get to be around the team.
Sounds like a great job.
It's cool.
Yeah,
it really
that's
does.
Awesome.
Yeah.
All right, Sean, this was fun, man. Appreciate you stopping by.
Thanks, guys.
Great doing business with you, mm-hmm. with the Breakers. Mm-hmm. You work with us, and
I work with y'all. You work with me.
No, you work with us.
You work for us. I don't know, actually. We actually never signed anything.
We were told that we are the owners of the team. You're co-owner.
Yeah, you're a co-owner.
Which is nice.
So I guess we bring the cachet.
Uh-huh. You sure?
Yeah.
Yeah.
How many followers you got on Twitter, bro?
Is your logo on the jersey?
What?
Who bank account's bigger?
You don't know.
All right, well, that doesn't matter either.
We get paid $90,000 a show.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Well, whose bank account?
I think I'm still sending a lot.
Whose bank account's bigger in New Zealand?
mine.
You have a bank account in New Zealand?
No.
Neither do I. So we're even. We're on even playing ground right here now. Sean
That's
Marion,
pretty good. That's
Matrix,
pretty
good. The Tricks, thank you. Oh, Hall of Fame. Are you going to be in the Hall of Fame next year?
I hope so.
I think so. Yeah. I think that's it, right?
Hey.
Yeah, I think next year is the Hall of Fame year.
Who's giving your speech if you get in?
Great question.
I'll probably get my man J. Kidd.
Yeah?
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Give you one last assist?
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah. Nice. That's a solid one.
Intro.
J. Kidd, maybe have him spill a drink right as he's coming up so you can make your speech last a little longer.
Why not? Why not give me a drink while I'm on the
Yeah, there
you
go. Exactly. All right, Sean, thank you so much.
Thanks, guys. That was fun.
Whether you're searching for a home to buy or you're just obsessed with looking at homes for sale, Redfin's got you covered. Redfin updates their listings every 2 minutes so you can find the home that's just right for you. You can favorite homes, share listings with others, and even schedule tours with a local Redfin agent all in the app. When you're ready to buy, an experienced local Redfin agent can guide you through the whole process. So download the Redfin app today to get started.
Hey, it's PFT here talking about Peloton. Starting is everything when it comes to fitness. Peloton encourages you to get moving by doing what you can. Peloton helps you start no matter what level you're at. That's why they have instructors who motivate you from day one with thousands of classes from all levels to get you started. I love my Peloton. I'm back on the Buns of Anarchy. I've been back on the bike if you want to join Buns of Anarchy. Wherever you're starting, get moving with a Peloton bike or bike plus rental at www.onepeloton.com/bike/rentals. Terms apply.
Okay, let's do some segments. First up, we have PR 101 for Aaron Rodgers. So this story actually came out late Thursday while PFT was on a 16-hour flight. He's got another 16-hour flight coming up right after this. But yeah, you have another 16-hour flight. There was a long article about the demise of the Packers, Mike McCarthy and Aaron Rodgers. It was pretty much that Aaron Rodgers is a salty ass bitch, and he said there was quotes, not a natural born leader, he'll throw you in the doghouse, not accountable, doesn't address problems, hypersensitive, he never takes the blame, it's always the receiver's fault. Also, there might have been a little piece about how Mike McCarthy was just getting massages all the time and didn't give a fuck, but that was little minor shit. It was pretty much just Aaron Rodgers, a bad teammate.
Yeah, he has bitch tendencies sometimes. I think it's a very easy PR 101 for Aaron Rodgers. And it's you just pay Chris Conte to play on whatever team you're playing against that weekend. And boom, problem solved.
Yeah, I mean, to be totally honest, I read this article and it was porn for me. I was I had to stop and really savor it. Oh, my God. I was the verbal meme Antonio Banderas, going back on his computer and giving that nice smile. That was me reading the entire article. But the entire time I was reading it, I was these guys were so dysfunctional, and it was such a shit show, and they still kick the shit out of the Bears every year.
But you know what? Now so the narrative started to change on Aaron Rodgers. Every time you talk about how great he is, you are now contractually obligated to say, but he's only won the one Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
That's part of Aaron Rodgers' name right now. It's, yeah, he's great, but he just won the one Super Bowl. And it turns out that, I don't think that any coach would be able to really get along well with Aaron. I think best case for Aaron Rodgers is he just tolerates you as his head coach.
Right. And it's going to be interesting because I feel like this might be a wake-up call. Hey, this could be your legacy, the guy who couldn't get along with teammates and everything, even though if you read the article, being totally honest, it was clear that it was dysfunction all around. It wasn't fully Aaron Rodgers. I think he's probably difficult to be around sometimes. But Mike McCarthy sounded like a pretty big dunce. And, the management sounded pretty stupid. But it's going to be interesting to see what happens going forward because Aaron Rodgers now, he's got maybe the coach killer tag, even though he only killed one coach in 15 years, but still, coach killer?
He's attempted murdered several coaches, though.
Yes. Yes. He's
escalating to coach killer. It's serial killers, when they're young kids, they do stuff with animals and stuff. Aaron Rodgers is escalating. He's working his way up there. And so if he doesn't cut these out right now, I could see him getting a few more fired before the end of his career.
Next up, we have Way to Stay Relevant Baseball. Yasiel Puig just tried to fight the entire Pittsburgh Pirates team, and it was the coolest picture ever. Way to Stay Relevant Baseball. You did a good job here.
Yeah, it was a great picture. Puig is looking chunky. He is that guy. He is so thick right now. Goddamn.
Yes, he is. And that single picture, though, that's a smart way to get people buzzing about baseball, is have it look like a scene from The Gladiator. And you know, we can't share videos online, so at least we can have pictures, and maybe in tomorrow's paper we'll read about it and it'll be cool.
Yeah, this is the fight that happens every single year. About, I think it happens on the same day every year in baseball. Like, you start to forget that the games are going on. It's like the week after opening day. Nobody really cares that much until, you know, after the NBA and NHL playoffs are over. And so they have the one fight that gets people talking.
Yes, exactly. All right, next up we have a shoe roast for the Jets' new jerseys. So those were unveiled on Thursday night. And do you start, PFT. What are your initial reactions from it?
My initial reactions are it's like a JV version of the Eagles jerseys, the Kelly Greens. That's what it looked like to me. Also, you don't need to do a full jersey unveiling. Just give me the color rush. That's all I want to know.
Yes.
What is the color rush like this year?
The color rush, and also, jersey Twitter is so fucking funny because everyone, like, at the end of the day, when you think about sports fans, and we are sports fans, and we are like, you know, this whole entire show is essentially a satirization of ourselves because at the end of the day, we're like inner meatballs. I love the idea that we're sitting there judging fashion while I'm dressed in like a Tasmanian Devil t-shirt. And like jeans that I haven't washed in 3 weeks. I'm like, the piping on the shoulder here is so stupid. Like, I can't believe they did this. The lettering is, it doesn't pop. How could you do a black outline? It's like, bro, look at yourself. You still wear, like, you know, shirts that you should be, like a middle schooler wears, and you're judging fashion.
Yeah, I woke up this morning and I put on shorts that I purchased because they had built-in underwear.
Right.
And I'm pissed off about the font on the side of the Jets sleeve.
It's so perfect. It's fucking, whenever there's a new jersey on Twitter, it's so funny because the people who have terrible fashion and the people who are most vocal about how bad they look, it's just one big circle, the Venn diagram, and we're all just like on our high horse. And then you look in the mirror and you're like, yeah, wait, did you just really spend 2 hours critiquing the fashion of the Jets uniform?
Yeah. Also, I mean, the Jets should almost come out with new, shittier versions of their uniform every single year because that goes right along with the state of the franchise. And it's probably, like, if you can get the people talking about how bad your uniforms are, that's a great distraction for the Jets. Like, that you will take that conversation 10 times out of 10 instead of talking about the product on the field.
Also, just a little tip for everyone out there who's unveiling a new jersey. I need you to have one guy come out in the old jersey because my brain is so small that the minute you show me a new jersey, I have no idea what the old jersey looked like. Like, you could put an old jersey, Jets jersey in front of me and be like, what is that? I've never seen that in my life before. So it's that quick that it just goes from my memory.
Yeah, also just like take the old jersey out on stage, but you can also doctor that one to make it look even worse. So no matter what, when you're showing the new jersey, they're like, oh, yeah, those old ones were pieces of shit. Look how ugly that thing is.
Yes.
It's just like a doctored jersey to look bad.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. All right, next up we have Matt Online, Antonio Brown. He's still Matt Online. He's still fighting with Juju Smith-Schuster. He's retweeting everyone who's buying Raiders gear. He does not want to be on the Raiders. I don't even know if he wants to play football anymore. He just wants to fight. He just wants to be a professional petty wars fighter for anyone against the Steelers.
Yeah, no, he just wants to be CEO of Antonio Brown Corp. He is a one-man team of Antonio Brown, and he does have rabbit ears, doesn't he? Like, he has the most thin skin. I mean, between him and Kevin Durant, there's a lot of ears on the ground out in the Bay Area. Just listen to all the haters. I think probably Antonio Brown listens more than even KD does at this point.
I also am getting to the point where he fights on Twitter every single day with ex-Steelers or fans or anyone, or basically has to prove how much money he made. Then I'm at the point where I'm going full-on addition by subtraction. The Steelers are going to be better without Antonio Brown.
Oh, I like that. I like that. And Juju seems like a funny guy. Mm-hmm. I think we've reached that point with Juju where he's become a big enough star. Hank, what the hell?
He just sneezed.
Hank just got me sick.
Okay, this episode is my fire fest for people who don't understand. We have to listen so there's no echo. Hank and I are sharing headphones. So I'm basically handcuffed to someone who's got like the bubonic plague. And Hank just keeps sneezing, and I can't get away from him because we're sharing headphones.
Jesus. Thoughts and prayers, man, because that was a very, very violent sounding sneeze he just let out. I think he's got swine flu.
It's these hotel rooms, dude. All right, let's finish up so that I don't die. PFT, you have a hot in the streets, and then we'll do our Monday reading.
Yeah, so I'm reporting live from the future in Hong Kong, and I picked up some new cool teen slang. So I was talking to a Hong Kong teenager in one of the parks here, and he taught me this word, Siebs. Do you guys say Siebs? Bubba, Siebs? You say Siebs?
Siebs?
Yeah, Siebs. It's like when you're just chilling by yourself. You're like dolo. You're solo. You just say, and your boy's like, hey, you want to come out tonight? You're like, nah, man, I'm Siebs.
Oh, so like, wait, let me try to use it in a sentence. Right now, I would give $1 million to be Siebs.
Yeah, you're not about to see Siebs life right now.
Yeah, I would pay anything like not be with Hank.
As soon as we disconnect, I've got like 5 hours to my flight. I'm just going to be Siebs for a minute and then roll.
Okay, nice. I like that. Just Siebs.
It's Hank, pretty cool, right?
Yeah.
Like, Hank, this is slang from the future.
Yeah, Hank, use it in a sentence.
I'm also excited for this recording to be over so I can be Siebs and be away from you.
Oh, because I'm getting you healthy, if anything.
You're being very mean.
No, my health is getting you healthier.
I'm just trying to do my job, and you're making it
very
difficult.
You're doing a great job.
Thank you.
And I know you're sick.
The way Hank says Siebs, that's your cop. That was cop shit.
That was mean. We're trying to be nice to him. All right. Let's do our Monday reading, which we actually taped before PFT went to Hong Kong, and then we will see you guys all on Wednesday, but here's the Monday reading.
Okay, let's finish up with our Monday reading. I alluded to it last week. Our producer, our super producer, he's the best producer in the world, Henry Lockwood. His resume, actually it was an introductory email when he first got hired at Barstool, is one of the greatest pieces of literature I've ever read. Hank, do you want to say anything beforehand, set the stage? You were 19, 18?
I was 19. I was just did like a one-year film program. I was in the middle of applying for other like shitty like PA jobs and like random video jobs.
Mm-hmm.
Went on Barstool. I saw a video. KFC was in the background like waving the flag, and I just assumed that KFC worked there too in the office because he was in the office.
Right.
And it was Dave being like, if there's anything you can do to help with this campaign, blah, blah, blah. And I, like, clicked because I was like, oh, shit, I can
Dave was running for mayor of Boston.
Yeah, he made a video. He's like, I'm running for mayor of Boston. You know, I want to win this shit. We need people to help the campaign. Like, if there's anything you can do, email Weird Haircut Seth and, like, tell us what you can do.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And so it was at a time when I was, like, pitching myself to other companies. And I was like, oh, boom.
Boom.
This is it.
Boom. Okay.
Excuse me. Bless you. Don't worry. I won't make fun of your sneeze.
Cut that. Okay. Hank, I had a quick question, though.
Yes.
Was there anything in your life that happened while you were in film school where you just said, fuck it, and it made you make the snap decision? Because it sounds like you were willing to risk it all for Barstool.
Yeah, film school folded.
No, that happened after the fact.
Oh, okay.
No, it was a one-year program.
Your check bounced?
I had finished the one-year program.
You went to Trump University of Film School.
It was Boston University Center for Digital Imaging Arts. A few years later, I think Boston University unaccredited it. They stopped associating themselves with the school.
After they learned you graduated from it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was good for what I needed to do. I needed experience. I needed to, like, I was doing it so I could get into another film school because I had no, like, nothing on my resume.
It's junior college for film school.
Pretty much.
Yeah. Most people just call that porn.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, the real reason is I tried to, like, I had worked, like, a landscaping job for my town the summer before. Then basically all I had to do was just resend an application just to, like, get back through the system and mm-hmm. back. And I forgot to send it. Like, it was just sitting in my apartment, forgot to send it. Called them, was like, hey. They're like, yeah, we already filled the spot. Like, you don't have a job. So I needed, like, I was like, fuck. Like,
I need a job.
I was like, I need to do something this summer.
You're panicking.
Okay.
So here's how it starts. I want you also, Hank, to stop me whenever I read a lie.
Okay.
All right.
Well.
Yeah. No, just stop me whenever I read a lie. All right. It starts, Mr. El Presidente. My name is Henry Lockwood, and I am going to be a game changer for your mayoral campaign because I can give you all the film and editing services you need for your mayoral campaign for prices I guarantee, all caps, spelled GARUNTEE. That's tough when you spell it that wrong and you also capitalize it.
It kind of draws a lot of attention.
A lot of attention to the guarantee, GARUNTEE.
The worst part about this, like, everything I said is truth. I sent this email, like, 10 times. I just copy and pasted it. I never once was like, spell check it. Like, is this?
No.
I literally would just send this email like I would copy and paste it and just resend.
Red little scribbles under everything. All right, so for prices, I guarantee you will not find anywhere else, period. All caps again, free, period. Way to negotiate, Hank. Right off the gate, first sentence, he's giving it to you for free.
Yeah, so you got to set yourself apart.
So did you put a period or did you just write the word period?
No, period, free, period.
Okay.
I am a 20-year-old stoolie through and through.
That was a lie. I was 19, but I wanted to make myself seem older.
Nice.
Seem mature.
First lie.
Yeah.
Okay. From the coastal town of Scituate, down on the South Shore. Nice. More importantly, I am soon to be graduating from Boston University Center for Digital Imaging Arts on June 1st with a degree in digital filmmaking.
That's a lie. It wasn't really graduating. Yeah. It wasn't really a degree.
It wasn't any
of
that.
I got a certificate. Yeah. In digital filmmaking.
Here's a little tip for everybody.
But again,
if you didn't graduate from college, and I'm not making any judgments on people that don't, because college is a fire fest kind of sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't graduate on your resume, just put the years that you went there and say, I finished at this school next year.
Right. All right. So picking back up, what does this mean to you and your campaign? It means that I have the skills, the equipment, and the manpower necessary to write, produce, and edit any kind of video you can possibly imagine or want to get made in any location at any time and make it look professional free. I feel like that all was a lie, because you now have gone from graduating to having a full camera crew and equipment truck at your fingertips.
Well, technically, as part of the tuition of the school, you did have access to all this stuff for free for a year.
You were there.
So that was, no, and for a year after.
But what about when it goes away, the school?
What do you mean?
Oh, well, it stayed.
That didn't happen for a few years.
All right, you're
when
good.
I wrote
you're
this
good.
Email, this was all truth.
So what kind of equipment did you have access to?
They had everything. They had sound, green screen, like nice cameras.
Yeah, you actually say right here. All right, here we go.
The thing was that I had access to it. I didn't really know how to use it that well.
Right.
But I did. That was
you did
true.
Have
that was
the access.
True.
Okay.
I could technically get all this
stuff. Okay, so here you wrote it. As part of my tuition for school, I have access to a gigantic selection of film equipment for free for a year after graduation, as well as the cameras and equipment me and members of my group own, which includes but is not limited to Sony X1 camera, Canon T5-1 camera, tripods, a 16-foot rig for crane type, swoop down shots, C stands, multiple types of lighting kits depending on what type of look you are looking for, HD camera monitors, two different types of green screens, camera gels, dollies, flag kits, monopods, etc. Basically everything you need and more to make videos for your campaign and website at no cost to you.
Well, that's
good.
I mean, that's
good.
A great pitch.
Okay. Well, yeah, that is a great pitch. When it comes to editing, I am trained on Final Cut X, the most up-to-date Final Cut version available in the industry standard for filmmakers. I have the program on my
lap. That's kind of a lie.
Okay. Yeah, So what did you know about editing?
So the school, like, they basically, like, you did things in, like, a week or 2 weeks. So they'd be like, all right, Final Cut, you learn for 2 weeks. So it's like,
right.
I knew enough to know what to put this in an email.
To open it up.
But I didn't really use any of the stuff that
well. This is
very
relatable, by the way. Everyone who's ever applied for any job anywhere has said that they are proficient in Microsoft Excel, and no one is.
No one knows. All I know is I can move the cursor from cell to cell.
Yeah, the one guy who is fucking awesome at it,
yeah.
And it's a thing of beauty, but everyone else pretends they are, don't know.
It's like watching Mozart play the
piano. Oh, it's unbelievable. Someone who's sick at Microsoft Excel, fucking love it. Okay, so let's see. I have the program on my laptop as well as my desktop at home. I'm also trained and experienced in motion graphics for title sequence stuff. And always good when you can use stuff in a cover letter. Mm-hmm. And color correction to ensure the quality of the video is top-notch and not some shitty iMovie edit with generic graphics and text that everyone has seen
Wait,
before.
How come you've never done any color correction here?
Hmm. I have.
Oh. Really?
Yes.
Okay. What are you saying, that we're too pale? That you have to make us look tanner?
I thought there was only one editor here who knew how to do that.
No. I mean, no, I'm not going to shit anyone here, but there's no one here that knows how to do it like professionally, but I do some
it's a good thing they're not getting paid for
it. There's no way you're going to find someone who has access to this type of equipment and crew personal with a totally clear schedule, willing to do it for free, because I doubt there's many diehard stoolies with nothing but time and lots of equipment. There's no
actually pee. That's like a lot of stoolies.
Didn't put a P in that equipment. Equipment on their hand, willing to work for you and your team around the clock. But maybe I'm wrong. That's a doozy of a sentence. There's no way you're going to find someone who has access to this type of equipment and crew personnel with a totally clear schedule, willing to do it for free, because I doubt there's many diehard stoolies with nothing but time and lots of film equipment on their hand, willing to work for you and your team around the clock, but maybe I'm wrong.
But maybe I'm wrong is a great way to end that
sentence.
That catches someone's eye. Now, did he spell Gunna, G-U-N-N-A?
No, he's got Gunna right. We're good with that. I don't care about money. Again, good way to anchor this negotiation. I don't care about money because I understand the amount of money and effort it takes to run a campaign. And since I can get all the equipment for free, I just figured I would offer you what I have and let it be at your disposal, because I want to see you as mayor, spelled with an E, and also because there's nothing else I would rather do with my time that would be more helpful or more fulfilling than helping you and Barstool campaign team shock the world and become mayor, spelled correctly. You actually spelled mayor two different ways in the same sentence. That's fantastic. Again, everything I'm putting on the table is free of charge, so it's really a no-loss situation
for
you.
I really want to stress that you can abuse me as much as you want.
Got him a job. Fucking Hank is producer of the number one sports podcast now. This is how you make it, kids. We all have had this moment. I remember I had this moment. I sent out a resume once with just the wrong email address on everything. I was like, why am I not getting any replies? Mm-hmm. I'm attaching my demo reel that I give to the corporations when applying at their companies. How many corporations did you apply
for? The companies.
When I was writing this, I was like applying to other places.
Oh, you were? Okay, so this went out everywhere.
This went out to all the corporations
and
several companies.
Yes.
Now, I didn't get any offers or job offers from any of those corporations that I applied to.
No, I like what you, so
except Barstool, which is so perfect.
Hank, I like what you're doing here, because yes, you have kind of gone out of your way to say you don't have to pay me, but you've also kind of made yourself wanted by letting Dave know that there are many companies,
there's offers,
and there are corporations out there that are interested.
People are actively bidding for Henry Lockwood's services.
So if you can make me an offer that's exactly $0, I'll
exactly
take it.
Free, or maybe even less than free, I'll consider it. All right, I'm attaching my demo reel that I gave to the corporations when applying at their companies, as well as my resume and my Gronk the World video I made before I went to film school along with my buddies, that shows deep down I'm just a movie junkie stoolie that loves to smash shit. That's it right there. That's the fucking selling point. If you have any questions or are interested to call me, you left your phone number and your email. Viva La Stool, Henry Lockwood. I love this because, honestly, Hank, I know it's probably a little embarrassing, but it's also, like, very relatable. Because every kid out there who's, like, 18, 19, maybe you're graduating college trying to figure out what to do, you probably have sent out a resume with some words misspelled. And guess what?
Mm-hmm.
Hank is here now all because he's ready to work for free.
The real reason, I will say, it is a little embarrassing reading it back, especially with all the spelling.
The guarantee is the tough one because it's all caps.
Yeah.
It's the second sentence.
Yeah, and that's just kind of a problem I've always had of just like phonetically spelling things, correctly spelling
it. That told me that you were enthusiastic while you're writing it.
Yeah. But, so
you didn't have time to go back and
this
spell
email
it.
Really meant nothing because Dave never even read it. This got brought to his attention like 3 years later, and someone was like, how did you hire this kid? And Dave replied to the tweet. He's like, I didn't see this email. Weird haircut Seth hired him. I never would have hired him if I saw this. But what I did is that I sent this, and I probably sent it, like, no joke, like 15 times. Like, I just kept copying and pasting, sending it to Weird Haircut Seth, copying and pasting, sending it to Weird Haircut Seth. And then eventually what I guess I heard, like, after the fact behind the scenes is they had, like, a trouble with, like, a film crew, and they're like, who should we get? And Seth was just like, this kid's been emailing me nonstop. And then, like, he said that to Gaz, and then Gaz called me.
Mm-hmm. Fuck yes.
So, like, Gaz didn't even read the email.
Never give up.
Seth was just like, this kid, like, he heard Dave and Gaz having a conversation, like, what are we going to do? And he was like, this kid's been emailing me nonstop, like, blah, 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 blah.
So your resume was essentially just a series of emails that somebody saw that they got. Just like it said Henry Lockwood and then parentheses 25 because there were 25 emails. And that
will work for free.
That little subject line was your resume in this case.
Yes. And then Hank got hired. And well, then his first day on the job.
I worked for free for like.
Well, yeah. You did. I mean, why wouldn't you? Because you said it like 16 times.
Well, yeah. But Dave didn't even know that when
major bait and switch. If he had showed up and be like, okay, my salary demands are.
But he did show up, and Hank's first day on the job was the day that we did our first like big video, and Hank was running the whole thing.
Well, Gaz called me. He was like, gives me a call. He's like, hey, we're doing this video tomorrow with Todd McShay. Like, can you come help edit it? And I was, like, shooting my pants, like, Todd McShay, like, holy fuck, ESPN, blah, blah, blah. And then we showed up. He's like, all right, this is our equipment. Like, this is what we have. Like, how should we set it up, blah, 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 blah. And I was just like, what the fuck? Mm-hmm. Like, I said I know how to use this stuff. I don't actually.
How'd the video turn
out? You can watch it. It's still up there somewhere on YouTube. But, yeah, it was okay.
I mean, the beauty of, like, when I started, I was so bad at making videos. And now people look back, like, these are the best videos because it's, like, the Barstool charm. It's like. Yeah. They're just shitty videos, but like people for whatever reason like them for nostalgia reasons. I always cringe watching them back because it's just like, I mean, it's very elementary.
Yeah,
can the I tell you something, Hank? Yeah. So when I was probably about your age, the age that you are now. So yeah, we're laughing, we're having a good time. You are way more successful right now than I was when I was your age.
Oh yeah.
At this age, I sent a very similar email to Chris Cooley. The tight end of the Redskins. You remember he was like trying to get into sports blogging and he was like writing a bunch of shit. And I was like, hey man, I noticed that you're doing this, this, and this. It's pretty funny. I can help you out with your video services because I owned like a nice camera. I lied way more than you lied about what I could do.
Final Cut Pro.
And then his brother Tanner, the Cooley boys, they were some ratty bros. They got back to me and they're like, yeah, let's do it. Next day. He takes a picture of his dick and accidentally posts it online. And he's like, we've been asked to kind of tone it down by the organization, so I don't know if we're going to be doing any video stuff. So that was a minor seven-year stumbling block in my career.
Yeah.
But good for you, Hank. You were scrappy, you were gritty, you were determined, and it worked.
Yes.
That's the bottom line.
And now you're here. It's fantastic read. It's funny. It would not be a funny read if you weren't here right now. Now it's a funny read because, like, yeah, you're very successful.
Yeah, let's read all the resumes of people that we decided not to hire and make it that would just be mean.
All caps, guarantee. GARUNTE.
If you are going to apply for an internship this summer, we need someone that's good at Pro Tools.
Ooh, and also spreadsheets. I want the Excel. I want you to figure out numbers for me. I want you to
mostly
teach
Pro
me
Tools.
Numbers.
Yeah, mostly
yeah,
Pro
but
Tools.
No, but
mostly
I really Pro need Tools. The numbers thing. I want numbers.
We'll have somebody that knows what numbers are.
Yeah. All right, PFT, this is future PFT. Good luck on your flight.
If I died, this podcast right now is going to be worth a shitload of money.
Mm-hmm.
So here's what you do. I want your word on this, guys. If I die in a plane crash or in a Hong Kong accident or I get kidnapped and sold into white slavery, I want you guys to sell this podcast. Only one person gets it. The highest bidder. Squarely style, like when you bought the Wu-Tang album.
So just this tape.
Just this part of the tape.
Yeah, I'm going to be honest. I'll tell a live you right now that we'll do that. But if the final four, if my final four bets didn't go well, I will definitely do like once I raise enough money, I'll release it to everyone. I'm being honest with you. My dying wish for you is for me to be honest to you.
You don't get to do a dying wish to me.
That's it right there.
My dying wish to you is to sell this.
I'm going to sell it for as much cash as I can get right away.
Sell it to Tom Dundon.
Again, much cash right away.
Okay. Love you guys. This is spooky PFT from beyond the grave. Ooh.
I got the horses in the bag. So I don't know what I'm to say. I'm sage anyway. Today's another day to find you shining away. I'll be coming for your love, okay? Take on me. Take me on. I'll be gone in a day or two.
It's Pardon My Take, presented by Barstool Sports.